99.5 FM, WBAI New York, and on the internet at WBAI.org. It is 5 o'clock. The program is just heard. Labrish with Haptah Selassie will be back next week at 2 a.m. following the work of the Midnight Ravers. Stay tuned for Back of the Book that comes your way right here. Right here, right now.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It's probably just around near 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. The Ides of this June are indeed troubling. Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners wherever they may be.
And we're going to talk about various things on this program. You can find out a little bit more about them by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. And you can look around up there. You'll see a blue navigation frame on the left side of your screen. At the top, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that, and you will get to the web page for this morning's radio program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 179th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program because a recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story in the entire multiverse for this week is we are still holding at the ultra-gigantic total of 124 followers on Twitter or X or whatever they're calling it now. The next regular WBAI local station board meeting will be held on Wednesday, July 10th, 2024 at 7 p.m. That meeting will be held on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. We had a local station board meeting this past week. It was not an ordinary one. The main topic of discussion was the Pacifica Executive Director's action earlier in the week of putting WBAI management on, quote, administrative leave, unquote, and replacing them with a WBAI producer who is now interim general manager and interim program director. Well, we'll see what happens next, folks. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention has a website. And if I'm reading it right, the CDC website seems to be saying that the death toll in America for this past week was 132, which is much lower than it had been. The CDC website is no longer tracking the cumulative death toll in America from COVID-19, but it is doing these weekly ones, it looks like. From what I've read, the virus is still infecting people and there are even new variants showing up. Maybe we're coming out of the pandemic, or maybe it's just that the warm weather is slowing the spread of the virus a lot. Pickles of the North and I are not wearing our masks as much as we had been at this point, but we are still planning on getting our spring booster shot soon. And here we are, and it's what's referred to these days as LGBT plus Infinity Pride Month. And, oh boy, I used to be a militant gay activist in the Gay Activists Alliance. Now, on the program here and there, I look back to what was happening 50 years ago when I talk about it. And 50 years ago, my male ex, 50 years ago this past week, my male ex, he wasn't my ex yet, gave me a bigger, easier-to-read gay power button. And I wore that thing for another decade. And I had this big gay power button I would walk around with. And next to it was the Lambda symbol. Nobody knew what the hell that meant. The Lambda symbol was supposed to be the international symbol of the gay liberation movement. Because Gay Activists Alliance had chosen that as our symbol. In fact, we did that on April 16th, 1970. I was there and I voted for it. And so we had that, and it had been in consideration for a little while. A guy named Tom Dorr came up with it, and he had it traced out and cut out in construction paper. And the idea was the Lambda was supposed to be gold, and it was against a navy blue background. And they didn't have the gold-colored construction paper, so it was on orange construction paper. So it was handed off to Randy Wicker. You may have heard of Randy Wicker. Besides being the Grand Marshal of the Christopher Street Liberation Day March, he was also an activist back in the old days. And he somehow was connected to the firm that made the buttons. Maybe he owned it. I don't know. Somehow, Tom Dorr, the designer of the Lambda button, gave it to Randy Wicker, who would get it done. And attached with a paperclip to all of this was a note saying that the background color was navy blue and the color of the Lambda was gold. However, somewhere that little paper-clipped note fell off. So what we ended up getting was a sort of navy blue background, but an orange Lambda symbol. And that's what we had. That's what we wore. So I wore that thing. And in, I think it was maybe 73 or so, there was a big gay lesbian conference. That's, we didn't have LGBT plus infinity in those days. We, you know, gay was good enough. It covered everybody. We were so naive. And so there was a big conference in Scotland, and it was international gay activists going there. And the GAA people who went there said, hey, how about making this the symbol, the international symbol of gay liberation? And people said, yeah, okay. And that was it. Now, nobody remembers that anymore. And tragically, I think a large percentage of the people who did know about it are no longer with us. Yeah, that did happen. Now, of course, we've got from, I think it was like 1982, 1983, a guy in California came up with the rainbow flag, and that became the symbol of what I guess is called the gay rights movement. See, we were about gay liberation. It started with the Stonewall riots, not rebellion, not nice, peaceful. It was a riot. It was a full-fledged riot. People almost got killed. People were hurt. Doors were bashed down. The police attacked people and hurt them. People attacked and hurt the police. And it went back and forth. And for days, there were riots raging through Greenwich Village because the police had raided the Stonewall and people were too pissed off to allow that to just happen. And so what happened was they fought back. And this was as far as we know, a first. And you all know the story after that. And so gay liberation started up after that. People said, yes, we'll start the Gay Liberation Front. And they did that. And after a while, some people said, the Gay Liberation Front is never going to get real things done. One of the deals with the Gay Liberation Front is it doesn't have any structure. It doesn't have any way of making things really happen. People can do some things, say, oh, let's go do this. And some people may or may not show up to do that. And all they can really do is sometimes show up for a demo. That's about it. Get a few people in the street with some signs yelling. Okay, that's important stuff. But there needs to be more than that. It especially needs some sort of structure so that people who can do things in life are going to say, you know, I want to get involved in that. Now, they may look at some of the stuff GLF would do back in the old days in like 1970 or so and say, hey, that's good stuff. I agree with them. But they are a lot less likely to join in. And so a number of Gay Liberation Front activists said, we got to get something else, because this idea of you run a meeting by the person who has the floor is the person who can yell the loudest, and that, you know, everybody's just yelling and screaming and it's all disruptive, that can't work. We can't put things together like that. Plus, it was full of, you know, various political ideas. You had various people trying to be communists. Yeah, the Soviet Union was so good to gay people. Let's get more of that crap. And some of them were right-wing guys. One guy founded his own organization, and the goal of the organization was to promote the increased geographical area of the United States. He wanted to take over other countries. I think Mexico and Cuba were on his agenda. And, well, yeah, that's kind of right wing right there. And, oh, so you had, you know, all these things back and forth, and nobody could really sit through those kinds of meetings and try to do something serious, because you could spend a couple of hours saying, okay, we could do X, Y, and Z and figure out and working it out with somebody. And then somebody walks in who has no idea what's going on and may be completely bombed out of his mind on drugs and starts saying, no, we can't do that. That's oppressive. That's capitalistic. You oppressor, you! And starts accusing the person trying to organize things of being a villain. So some people said, we're never going to get anywhere with this. And so in December, what they told me was, it was December 22nd, 1969, they got together and said, we're going to form our own group called the Gay Activists Alliance. And there were a few guys in it. The Daily News says Morty Manfred founded the Gay Activists Alliance. No, it was a bunch of people. It was, you know, Jim Owls, Tom Doerr, whom I just mentioned, Arthur Evans, Arthur Bell, Phil Rea, Marty Robinson, and a couple of others whose names are just slipping away from me right now. They weren't the only ones. And so there were a couple of more. And so they founded the Gay Activists Alliance, and they did things like say, the meetings will be run by Robert's Rules of Order. And there was a constitution of the Gay Activists Alliance, and it outlined what the goals were and stuff like, you have the right to your own body and we are proud gay people and all this kind of thing. And then it had rules for how to run the organization. Basically, they were bylaws. And then we went, we had a meeting, we would go by Robert's rules. GLF used to make fun of us for that, but we actually got things done. We invented gay rights. Now, people had thought of it before, but we actually got it together. A guy named Richie Amato out on Long Island put together the first gay rights bill. And it became Intro 475 in New York City. And oh boy, that was something that was a saga in and of itself, and it took many years to get passed, but eventually it was passed in the New York City Council. We had demos and zaps and all of this kind of thing. which a lot of people have heard about, and which the Daily News consistently attributes to the Gay Liberation Front because somehow they can't understand that Gay Activist Alliance existed and did things. And even though sometimes the Gay Liberation Front people would show up for it, because we did this write-on stuff, it was a GAA action. And sometimes we would do stuff in cooperation with GLF, but it wasn't solely a GLF action. So, yeah, I know, I'm just this old stickler who remembers stuff nobody else remembers. That's life. So, yes, in 1974, 50 years ago this past week, my ex, well, he became my male ex, and he passed away some years ago, gave me a new gay power button. My old one was a very dark background with black lettering on it. And the new gay power button was significantly bigger, like 50% bigger. And it had kind of purplish gay power lettering on a yellow background. And man, you could see this across an entire subway car. I know, because I managed to have to deal with some people who didn't like it.
At this point, I should say that this is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. He is R. Paul Martin, and I am Radio's Pickles of the North.
I also note that this past week, in 1970, we had the Rockefeller Five demo. Nelson Rockefeller was governor of New York, and he became vice president of the United States after Tricky Dicky Nixon left and Gerry Ford replaced him, and Ford had to have a vice president, so he chose Nelson Rockefeller. And so before that ever happened, in 1970, we had a demo, and it was a two-tiered thing. It was a zap and a demo. We had some people dressed well, very nicely, suits and ties, going up to the Republican headquarters of New York State. I think it might have also been the governor's office in New York City. Anyway, they went upstairs to the eighth floor, and they said, "Oh, we need to see the governor. Can we see the governor?" And they didn't get to see the governor, but his people were there. And then they said, "Gay power!" And while that happens out in the street, we're having a demo. There weren't many of us, but we were loud. And somebody came down and said, "They can hear you up on the eighth floor. It's as if you're right in the next room. Keep going." So we kept going and yelling. And, oh boy, we did a very noisy demonstration, and we did it for 8 hours. It was a handful of GAA members, and we did it for 8 hours. Various things happened during it. One guy attacked the group. And, oh boy, and there was this drag queen named Natasha, and Natasha was, you know, in drag and 6'4". So this guy, I think he was drunk, he comes charging in at us, and Natasha wrapped the GAA banner around him and smacked him. Well, that was, you know, that was it for him. The police were watching, of course, and they grabbed the guy and said, "Don't you do that to people. You can't." So I said, "Oh, you know, he charged us. What the hell?" So nobody got arrested or anything, but this guy, he had like his, you know, groceries with him. Stupid thing. You're carrying groceries and you charge into a crowd. And so his groceries went rolling around on the floor. And yeah, that was one of the things that happened. The other thing that happened for me personally was we yelled so much and so loudly, my voice permanently changed. It never became the same as it was before that week in June 1970. So, oh boy, that was a change for me. Yeah, so we had the Rockefeller, we became the Rockefeller Five. It was the people were arrested in Rockefeller's office. Five of them were arrested, and we called them the Rockefeller Five, and that's another story I'm not going to tell this time. And we had demos around that, Free the Rockefeller Five. So, yeah, God, those were old days, of course. So this is also a week when we remember something else bad that happened. The Pulse nightclub murders were 8 years ago. And in that, some anti-gay bigot showed up at a gay nightclub in Orlando, Florida. The nightclub was called the Pulse Nightclub. And he showed up with rifles, AR-15s. And so he showed up. He didn't have a bump stock, luckily, or it would have been worse. And by the time he was done, 49 people were killed and 53 were injured when he attacked the patrons. And I must say, I remember the Orlando police were not exactly swift to take action to stop him. That was on June 12th, 2016. And, oh boy, that was something. That was a really tragic, awful thing. Speaking of murderous people with rifles, the Supreme Court split 6-3 yesterday on Friday in a ruling that strikes down a regulation by the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives that was implemented during the reign of former President Donnie Bonespur Trump after a mass murder by a creep who used a number of bump stocks and AR-15-style semi-automatic rifles to kill 58 people and injure hundreds more, because all of these people were attending an outdoor country music festival in Las Vegas, Nevada. And they're out there at night, and the mass murderer fired from a high window in a Las Vegas hotel where he'd brought in an entire arsenal of guns with large magazines. And he had these large magazines that hold at least 20, maybe 30 rounds of ammunition. And he had them all filled completely. All of these magazines were filled. He also had loose ammo with him just in case he had enough time to refill some of the magazines if he used up all of the ammo. He had his AR-15 rifle and lots of ammo. And I think he had the magazines taped together so he could very rapidly switch one around. And then he had more magazines and rifles with him, fully loaded rifles. He also had a bump stock with him. And this was the thing that made the big difference. There were, I think, something like 22,000 people showed up, thousands of people showed up to be at this outdoor concert. And it was in like a great big parking lot. So it's just a lot of open space for people to stand around in. I've never understood the allure of standing in a parking lot for hours on end, but a lot of other people do, so there's that. Anyway, so they had assembled there, and there were thousands and thousands of people in this parking lot, and they're ready, and the music goes on, and this guy breaks out the window and opens fire on them. And he's not aiming for a person. He's aiming for the crowd. And the crowd is right there. And he just opened fire. Now, because of the bump stock, he would just aim it roughly at the crowd and squeeze. And the gun with the bump stock would very rapidly empty the entire magazine at those people. And then he would switch the magazines around very fast, do it again. And then he would grab the next rifle, which already had a bump stock on it and big magazines, and he could continue doing this. And he did it over and over again. And he would, you know, use all multiple clips in these things and just keep firing with one rifle after another. He fired a hell of a lot of bullets at the crowd that night. And if he had just had a rifle that only relied on his fingers to fire it, even using all of the rifles and magazines that he'd set up, he would not have been able to get that many shots off at the crowd in so short an amount of time. And the rapidity is a factor. The rapidity in which he was able to empty so much ammunition into that area meant that people who were trying to get away, to get undercover, had less time to do so. Because it is a lot like a machine gun. Now, it's not like a real machine gun, but I think, in fact, the rate of fire with a bump stock on an AR-15 might exceed the rate of fire of the old M60 machine gun. Because the M60 machine gun was made after the Korean War because the so-called People's Republic of China would stage human wave attacks where they would just have thousands of soldiers coming at the enemy, which was us, and they would have thousands of soldiers coming at you. And, of course, the natural tendency is to just, on your machine gun, squeeze it and not let up and keep spraying at them. And it works. You just mow them down. However, you use up your ammo very fast, and in pretty short order, the machine gun seizes up because you're not giving the barrel enough time to cool down. When metal gets hot, it expands. The rifle barrel expands and so makes the bore of the barrel that the bullets go through a little bit skinnier, and the bullets have a hard time getting through, and eventually they don't get through, and now your machine gun is useless, unless you want to throw it at somebody, which is hard to do with those machine guns. And so the United States government said, we got to come up with something else. So they came up with the M60 machine gun, which had a lower rate of fire, but it fired from an open bolt, which meant that it went back, and when you didn't squeeze the trigger, the bolt was all the way back, and air could pass through the barrel and the receiver of the weapon, and it would cool it down a bit, and that made enough of a difference between the open bolt cooling down the weapon and the slower rate of fire. So they had that. So that wasn't that fast a shooting weapon, but the AR-15 is based on the M16 rifle, which is made to fire full automatic, or rock and roll, as we used to call it. And in an M16 rifle, the modern ones, you dial, and in the modern ones, you dial full automatic, and you squeeze, and it shoots out 3 rounds at once for every squeeze of the trigger. In the old days, you set it up for automatic fire, you squeezed it, and it emptied the magazine if you didn't let go of it. Of course, it would only empty the magazine if it didn't jam. That's another story. In any event, so the M16 rifle fires a lot faster than the M60 machine gun used to. So the rate of fire of an AR-15, which is basically the same as the M16 rifle, with the exception that there's a doohickey missing on the inside, which doesn't allow you to make it into an actual fully automatic rifle. So an AR-15 rifle can empty a hell of a lot of bullets at any target. So it can handle, you know, full automatic fire. And, oh boy, that guy, you know, people said, this is terrible, this is awful, look what he was able to do, and it's because of the bump stock. And so the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives issued a regulation that said, we're banning bump stocks. Well, a guy named Michael Cargill, a Texas gun store owner, sued the ATF, the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, Firearms, and Explosives, over this rule. And the Supreme Court ruled in his favor yesterday, Friday. And, oh boy, now bump stocks are legal all over the place again. They're unregulated. Oh, godlessness. And so as I've said, you know, the thing is, you can really empty a lot of bullets in a direction from this thing. It's not like it isn't something you could use to go hunting with. And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn, and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. So in yesterday's majority opinion striking down the ban, Justice Clarence Thomas wrote, quote, a bump stock does not alter the basic mechanics of bump firing, and the trigger still must be released and re-engaged to fire each additional shot, unquote. Either he's so stupid that he thinks that that's how it works, or he thinks everybody else is stupid enough to believe what he wrote. It's not true. The entire idea of the bump stock is to make the rifle shoot very much faster than you can shoot it with just pulling the trigger. You're not doing it. The bump stock is really doing it. The entire idea of the bump stock is to make it all shoot faster. With the bump stock, you do not need to squeeze and then release the trigger yourself. The bump stock replaces the regular stock of the rifle, and with the AR-15 type rifle, there the back of the rifle is straight. The reason that is because there's a spring in there, and the bolt comes right back into the a ways and compresses the spring that's in the stock, and then goes forward. It's different from previous types of rifles, and it can be very fast. The AR, the original M16, had a tremendous, like 750 to 800 rounds per minute rate of fire. It was gigantic. What they had to do, because it was so gigantic, it was, you know, caused problems, was they put a little doohickey in the stock along with the spring, and the doohickey has a cavity in it, and in the cavity there's a little plastic ball. And so when the recoil of the rifle, when the bolt comes back and compresses the spring, it pushes that little doohickey with the ball in it back. And, of course, inertia happens, and the ball hits the front of the little tube. It's a tube. And it hits the front of the tube as it's being pushed back, so that retards the speed with which it can go back. Then as it comes forward, it does it again and retards the speed with which it can go forward. Now, it's still very fast, but it's not as fast as it used to be because this way it doesn't jam. So you have this mechanism in the stock of an AR-15. So with the bump stock, you do not need to squeeze and then release the trigger. The bump stock replaces the regular stock of the rifle and basically allows the gun to bump back after each round is fired. When the gun itself moves back into the bump stock, your finger just stays in one place, but since the gun is moving backwards, the trigger is allowed to come back as if you had released the trigger yourself. So when the whole stock goes flying forward, the trigger hits your finger. Your finger isn't moving the trigger. The trigger is hitting your finger. That fires the rifle. So it's all bound up with the way the AR-15 type of rifle handles recoil. And the recoil is used in this case to bounce it back. And basically, you're holding a grip that's the bump stock. And you hold that, and the gun fires, the gun moves backwards into the bump stock, then comes forward, and the trigger hits your finger, and the trigger is squeezed, and it goes off, and it goes back, and this keeps repeating until there are no more bullets in the gun to be fired anymore. This makes it fire in a fraction of a second. Very, very fast, far faster than a human being can really squeeze it. Now, maybe some human being could. There could be some guy somewhere who could squeeze it like that, but your finger's going to get tired at some point. You use a mouse on your computer, I bet. Well, you can't really, you know, click with the mouse too much because your finger gets tired and you get inaccurate. With this kind of a thing, you don't have that fatigue of your tiny muscles in your finger. You just squeeze hard and hold on, and it empties a magazine, no matter how big the magazine was. So I hope I've described the bump stock adequately there. It works. All the shooter has to do is hold the bump stock's grip tightly, and a 20-round magazine is emptied in about a second or so. Now, that's fast shooting. And Justice Sonia Sotomayor, in a dissenting opinion, said the court had cast aside Congress's definition of a machine gun in making its ruling. She wrote, quote, "A bump stock equipped semi-automatic rifle fires automatically more than one shot without manual reloading." By manual reloading, they mean somehow getting the next round into the chamber to be fired, because with this, just, you know, wham, wham, wham. And and she continues, "It fires more than one shot without manually reloading by a single function of the trigger," unquote. And that's true. That's exactly what it does. She says, "Because I, like Congress, call that a machine gun, I respectfully dissent," unquote. So this is a terrible ruling. And, you know, Jesus Christ, it's not a machine gun. Okay, the interior parts of the gun are not a machine gun, but you have this dingus on the outside of it that replaces the stock that makes it fire just as fast as a machine gun. There is no real accuracy with that thing. It's very efficient if you have a crowd of thousands of people hundreds of feet away and you want to spray the crowd with bullets, because it doesn't matter that they go all over the place. The target is huge. So there you go with that. And the Supreme Court is considering another gun case challenging a federal law intended to keep guns away from people under domestic violence restraining orders. So that's going to come down this month, I suppose. God, I wonder if one of the undisclosed people handing out gifts to Clarence Thomas is the NRA, because they're in favor of this kind of crap.
You know, Arpal, it seems like the Supreme Court does not have to pretend anymore that it is in any way fair. Now that they have the supermajority, they can make sure that when we do graduate in this civil war that's going on now to a shooting war, that people that share their beliefs will be fully armed and not have to worry about any regulation, maybe. It's just terrible. This is terrible. It is wrong. And I don't know what people can do about it. I mean, you can't vote out the Supreme Court.
Well, actually, you sort of could, but it would be very complicated, and I don't think you'd be able to do it. I think you have to have, like, the Senate, two-thirds of the Senate votes to get rid of them or something like that. The original idea with the Supreme Court was to get these very good people in place. They would be vetted, and they would be put in there, and they would be, you know, not nuts, and they would be disposed to doing things properly and following the law and being proper and seeing that the law is upheld. Now they're just trying to make America into a right-wing paradise.
Yes. So I guess some laws are great for that and others not so much. And if you're on the wrong end of the barrel for that, I guess it's just tough patookies for you. This is really awful and it's really blatant and they just don't care anymore. And the stuff they've been doing over the past couple of years, they just don't care.
Yeah, they don't care that we all know that they're a biased right-wing supermajority, because they are a supermajority. They don't have to worry about being removed from office. Some of them are probably going to be on the court for 30 or 40 years or more. And what do we do about this? I mean, it's been suggested that we put more people, make more justices, more seats on the Supreme Court, and overwhelm these guys with other guys. So, I don't know. It is a terrible thing, and bump stocks, I mean, it's just logic. That stuff shouldn't be around. Okay, let's change the subject a little bit. The summer solstice is coming this Thursday afternoon. Yes, June 20th, this coming Thursday at 4:51 p.m. Eastern Time, it will be the summer solstice, and whoopee, we'll be so glad about that. So there we are. Oh, the summer is my favorite season of the year, and it's going to be really great stuff because we're going to the middle third is my favorite time of the whole year. That's middle third is the months of May, June, July, and August. And we're in that now, and this is like the high point of the middle third, the summer solstice. And we get the longest day of the year, and we're going to be having sunset at 8:31 p.m. Eastern time, and that goes on into July for a little ways. This is very good stuff, and oh boy, I think at least most of us could say, oh goody, we like having all this light. As opposed to the gloom of the winter solstice. But anyway, there we are. We've got the summer coming in. And for some of us, the warm weather is okay. For not everybody, though, huh?
Well, if I wear a big hat and have lots of water and stay in the shade, it's not so bad. But this is a great celebration around the world. The solstices are always the, I guess some people call them June, the June solstice and the December solstice, because depending on where you are, it's either going to be summer or winter. But they are great. They're all greatly celebrated all around the world. And so celebrate, have a good time, stay hydrated if you're in a warm place.
Oh, who are those people? Where are they coming from? Oh, it's the pitching hobos. Yes, the WBAI pitching hobos are on the WBAI pitching train. And they're here to say, hey, please help us survive. Yes, this is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and streaming live at WBAI.org. The program is back of the book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North, and we're here to beg you for money. Yes, we are mostly listener-sponsored radio at this point in time. And yeah, there are going to be a couple of small changes with that, from what I'm told. And we need to pitch. Yes, there's been a management change at WBAI, but we still need to keep the radio station going no matter what. There are these disagreements back and forth throughout all of Pacifica. Well, we need to keep the station going. And what we need to do is ask you to send us some money. You can call 1-212-209-2950. Now, try that number. And if nobody picks up, which is entirely possible, please go to WBAI.org. When you get to WBAI.org, you will see a little rectangular green area on the front page. There's a black dove or a black bird of some sort. It's supposed to be a dove. There, and it says, BAI buddy, become a sustaining donor. And we want you to become a BAI buddy, which is the name we have for sustaining memberships at BAI. And what you do then is you either call 1-212-209-2950 or you go to WBAI.org and you click on that green square with a dove in it that says BAI buddy, become a sustaining donor. And you either tell somebody or select when you get to the next page on the website, becoming a BAI buddy. What you do is you'll be giving your credit card or debit card information, and you'll be saying how much you want to donate on a monthly basis. That's what a sustaining member does. You'll be donating on a monthly basis. Now, you can pledge to do it $10 a month, $15 a month, $20 a month, more if you can afford it. But, you know, most of our listeners probably want to do the $10 to $20 range. So that's what you could do. And then you will say what day of the month you want your credit card or debit card charged. And then you'll be able to be charged at that point on a date when it's convenient for you. I mean, you know, you may not want it on the first of the month because maybe there are too many bills. You may not want it at the last day of the month. Who knows when you want it? Sometime in the month, you'll pick a date and you'll get charged then. That way you'll be subscribing to WBAI, sending us money on a monthly basis, and helping us to keep the station alive. We have had a lot of problems here going on, obviously, and so we need to try and keep people around here. We need to keep people, we need to keep the radio station going. We have bills. We have to pay about $17,500 a month for the tower. The tower is where we keep the transmitter and where the antenna is that allows you to hear the radio. And we have to pay rent at 388 Atlantic Avenue, where our studios are. We have a staff that has to be paid. It's a tiny staff. We used to have a skeleton crew of staff. Well, our skeleton crew is missing a lot of its bones at this point because we've cut so much. And we have various other bills we have to pay. So we need to pay some of those. We have been falling behind on bill payments for quite some time, and it's reached a crisis point. And Pacifica has replaced WBAI's management. And this is the new development. And that doesn't mean BAI is just going to go away or something right away. We hope it's not going to. But if we don't raise enough money, it might. So if you've been saying, gosh, R. Paul, you're BSing us about how dire things are, well, now you know that I haven't been, that we really do have this very serious problem here of money. BAI doesn't have the dough to pay its bills. So we're asking you to call 1-212-209-2950. If you're listening to this program over the archives, you might be listening at a time when that phone number is going to have somebody there to take the call. 1-212-209-2950. Somebody will pick up and ask for your information. You give it to them, and very importantly, say you want to donate in the name of Back of the Book. Previously, management had said, hey, we got to have a certain amount of money from each program, and if you don't meet that goal, you're going off the air. Well, we don't want to have to go off the air because we can't raise enough money. So please help us out by making sure that you say, yeah, I want this to be in the name of Back of the Book. If you are listening at a time when that phone call isn't, you know, necessarily getting answered, go up to WBAI.org. When you get there, you'll see some stuff. You'll see a big banner thing that says upcoming programs, and it will show the next 3.5 programs that are coming up. And right underneath that, you'll have a couple of different things, one of which is a green rectangle with a black dove in it. And at the top, it says BAI Buddy, become a sustaining member. And when you get to that, click on that, and you'll be brought to a web page where you can pay some dough. You select the donation amount when you're there, and you also get to select your favorite show. Now, you click on that box that says favorite show, and Back of the Book is, at this moment, four places off the bottom. You'll see Back of the Book. We're the first program with a B in its name, and you can do that. There is also a PayPal option to donate. I don't know if you're going to be able to say you're donating the Back of the Book that way. See if you can. If you donate and either forget to say what your favorite show is or don't mention Back of the Book, write to me, rpm@glib.com, rpm@glib.com, and say, hey, oh boy, I pledged and I didn't, you know, tell them where it was. So I'm telling you, I pledged. You don't have to tell me how much or anything. Just tell me that you pledged and what time. Or if they give you some kind of a number, just give me the number. Like, you know, say it's you were listener or donor 6SJ7. And and you just send me that number, and I will send it to management to say, hey, this person donated to Back of the Book. And that way you will be able to say that you donated. Now, we do all sorts of different things here on this radio program. We do science stuff as much as we can. On the other hand, sometimes political stuff really becomes something we feel we need to mention. And yeah, we go into detail that others don't go into, because I think the detail is important. It's important to know, why the hell is a bump stock different from just having that kind of a gun? Does it really do much? And yeah, it does a hell of a lot if you want to just spray lots of people with bullets. So yeah, we get into describing things in detail. We do the science stuff and we do the same thing, whereas you'll get maybe 10 seconds related to a celestial phenomenon or a physical phenomenon on TV at a news show, after which the people there will all laugh at it because, you know, ha ha, this is so esoteric. You tune in to hear, and we give you, you know, maybe 10 minutes or more on, okay, this is what's happening with this particular scientific thing, and this is why it's happening and what it means and what it could do in the future. We do that. Others don't. I think that's valuable. If you think that's valuable, please call 1-212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and click on that green rectangle underneath upcoming programs and go through all of that and say what you want to donate and make sure you say it's for Back of the Book. 1-212-209-2950 or WBAI.org. And, oh boy, I wish there were a way to make it so that I could tell you how to get there so that Back of the Book is automatically chosen as your favorite show. And that's what they call it. That's how you have to do it. Even if we're not your favorite show, if you're donating to this show, you got to say it's your favorite show. That's the system. So I wish we could make it easier, but we can't. It's really set up to work with a phone number, and I think that at between 5 and 6 in the morning, we probably don't have a whole bunch of people answering the phone at WBAI anymore. 1-212-209-2950 is that number, however, and WBAI.org is the place to go and register your donation. So, please do that. You know, we bring you all these things. Also, I want to point out, this is an overnight program. We go from 5 to 6. Now, these days, right next to the summer solstice, it's light out for the entire program. Other times of the year, it's completely dark. But we are still an overnight program. Everything from midnight to 6 a.m. is an overnight program. There are people proposing, seriously, to rent out WBAI's air between midnight and 6 a.m. This would end up getting rid of all these overnight programs. If you like these overnight programs, please call 1-212-209-2950 or go to WBAI.org and say Back of the Book is your favorite program and donate so that management knows that there are people listening at this hour. Management may not even know. I have had management say nobody listens at these hours. Said that in the past. And, oh boy, this is a problem if we have nobody calling. So I don't know. I can't tell. We have to pre-record these days. I hope people are calling. 1-212-209-2950 and WBAI.org. Please donate in the name of Back of the Book. You would help to keep Back of the Book on WBAI and keep WBAI on the air. That's been it for Back of the Book for this week. Coming up next is
Everything Old is New Again, again with Mr. David Kenny.
And we have been informed that the 52-week schedule is no longer in effect, so we're supposed to be back here next week, which we didn't expect, but we'll be back here next week. It's going to be the summer solstice. It's going to be nice out. Oh, enjoy the new weather and all of that. And above all, remember what that contemplating the corruption of the Supreme Court during nice weather Dormouse said.
Strengthen your favorite station. Donate online at givetowbai.org. That's givetowbai.org. Or send your check or money order made out to WBAI-Pacifica to WBAI 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217. That's WBAI-Pacifica. Send to WBAI 388 Atlantic Avenue, Brooklyn, New York, 11217.
On Sunday, June 16th at noon, Bob Henley, Interim Program Director and General Manager, will provide an update on the station's efforts to come into compliance with the FCC regulations, which it had historically violated, involving using its signal to merchandise products. Pacifica, which owns WBAI's nonprofit broadcast license, has entered into a consent decree with that agency committing to abide by the laws and regulations for nonprofit broadcast license holders. Out of respect for employee confidentiality requirements and due process concerns, Bob may not be able to answer every question regarding two circumstances for the previous management team being placed on administrative leave with full pay and benefits. So tune in on Sunday, June 16th at noon for a report to the listener from Bob Henley, Interim Program Director and General Manager.
Hello, WBAI listeners and supporters. If you appreciate interacting with members of the WBAI local station board, then tune in Tuesday, June 18th from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. for the fourth report of 2024 from the WBAI local station board. This month, you'll hear from various members of the board. And as usual, they'll talk about their responsibilities, recent developments throughout the network, and they'll ask you for your ideas on how to build a stronger WBAI. So be sure to tune in. Again, that's Tuesday, June 18th from 7 p.m. to 8 p.m. for the fourth report of 2024 from the WBAI Local Station Board. Only on WBAI in New York, 99.5 FM.
The next WBAI Community Advisory Board meeting will be on Sunday, June 16th at 1 p.m. It is a call-in meeting hosted by Maestro. The call-in number is 619-309-1058. The PIN number is 641-711. All are welcome. Our station is facing many challenges. We hope you can attend and contribute your help to keep this great station alive. Again, our next Community Advisory Board meeting is Sunday, June 16th at 1 p.m. The call-in number is 619-309-1058. The PIN number is 641-711. Long live WBAI, community radio for the 99%.
Do you love WBAI? Now is your chance to get involved by participating in the local station board. Run for a seat on the board by becoming a candidate between June 1st and June 30th. Complete your candidate package located on elections.pacifica.org. Call 707-500-1910 to leave a voicemail for the election supervisor.
Like many of you, like many Americans, I have felt frustrated and betrayed by the state of the mainstream media in this country, a media whose priorities seem out of step with their responsibilities. We need a media that strengthens democracy.